What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms.
So SEC Media Days concluding. So now you get a whole lot of me here. And we've looked at nine teams now, and we got seven to go. And we were going to kind of get through those seven tonight. And one of the things I thought was interesting point of discussion from Media Days is whole conference games and the number of conference games. All right, let's give you a test and see.
You got me, cousin?
I got you. I can hear you clearly. There we go.
That's right. Let's go.
Yes, we're much better off. And the whole nine versus eight topic. And where do you stand in that realm? Whereas Big Ten plays the nine conference game, the SEC plays eight. And thank you, Ross, for checking in there and keeping with us. Where do you stand in that conversation? Because I actually, by the way, Danny Cannell, of all people, had a great idea, I thought, where he said, hey, everybody go to eight and then more Power Four conference games against each other. I thought that was actually logically good.
I mean, it's also something that I've been saying for years with the cross – everybody playing someone in a conference, it would give us a lot more, you know, data points if we would do that. Listen, don't you think it's fair? Here's the problem. If we want to get down to this, the problem is not all conferences are created equally, correct?
No.
Like, that's correct. A fair assessment. Nobody's going to disagree with that. Like, the ACC and the Big 12 are clearly lagging behind. Everyone agrees with that. Now, the Big 10 and the SEC – the Big Ten's got two national championships in a row. So, like, they're definitely riding high. And there's a reason that people are talking about them as a great. But if you're going to talk about the most talented conference top to bottom, here's an interesting thing, Brent. Like, Brent, how many teams in the SEC do you think can win the league?
The league, a lot. That's probably one of – so difficult. Looking
okay,
for
but
some
how,
of these schedules.
Give me how many teams do you think can play for? How about this? I'll do you one better.
More
how
than
many
half.
Teams? How many teams in this? Okay, that's a lot. Like, in this league, can play for the championship? Like, that's an interesting conversation for me, because if I go into the Big Ten, I'm not giving you very many names. I'm absolutely correct. I'm going to give you three.
I'm giving you
names.
Three and a maybe.
Yeah, and so that's where I understand where the SEC says that. The atmospheres in the SEC are extremely difficult to play. But I also understand, too, where, like, I want to play the same game everybody's playing, because here's where the SEC, to me, gets a big advantage. When they play that no-name school late in the season when you're guaranteed to get a dub, and they all do it, like, they all play – you know, one of the directional schools late in the season to give you a tune-up. Yeah, a Mercer type of a deal before a rivalry game, before that big game at the end of the season. And so I understand where we're coming from. Do I want uniformity? Sure. Like, I'd be fine with all of them playing eight. But I just want to say this. I want all of them to play eight, but I want all of them to play competitive games outside of their conference. That way we get the best chance. Now, listen, not every team's going to be up. Not every team's going to always give a game outside of things. But I would love to continue to say it. I want teams to play teams out of conference in multiple conferences so we get a better litmus test of how people cross match up and how good conferences really are, because it's really difficult to tell. Last year, everybody goes SEC head and shoulders. South Carolina could have been in the playoff. Well, Illinois proved they could have been in the playoff. Like, it's the greatest litmus test is when you play head to head. So I would love to see more of that. And I think we'd have a better chance, but make it eight, make everybody challenge themselves out of conference and play other teams. And then I think we'd have a really good fun show.
So, by the way, now that we're clear with the mic and the sound, where are you coming to us from again?
I'm in North Carolina. We're playing our tournament in South Carolina. So this is the Adidas National Championship for our 15U, 16U, 17U girls that we play with for Team Elite. And we actually play literally for it all. So you'll go through the gamut now, Brent. Like, you've been ranked throughout the season, and now you'll play tournament style play, win in advance to go try to be a national champion. So it was pretty cool. Like the level's definitely amped up. Listen, it's girls basketball. I get it. My son isn't having the greatest of times. Like he's not like really dialed in on the side saying this is high caliber, but it's fun. So in North Kakalaka tournament, right down the road in South Kakalaka.
Yeah. All right, cool. All right. So we got that out of the way. Let's talk Gators. They're first up. 4-5, by the way. If you would have asked me midway through the season, would Billy Napier still be here?
I would have said no.
I would have said definitely no. And then they win four straight. Lagway sort of takes off. You know, and now everything is sort of positive and a lot of great positive vibes looking for this season.
Well, and here's why it's positive. It's positive because what did Napier do really well, Brent? Like, to me, the culture of the team to stick together with all the negativity swirling, it shows you something about this dude. Like, he's got something to him that he can get people to buy in even when things around him's going crazy. That's a good coach. Like, that's a really good coach. Napier's scheme is very hard to defend. The way they do the stretch and the way they run the football, it's usually pretty productive. And I thought the line of scrimmage is the fact that, like, they lose guys that are all over the place last year that are on different rosters because of all the negativity, they still plug and play and had a great line of scrimmage. So I think that's another strength coming into this season. The Florida Gators come down to absolutely one thing, and it's DJ Lagway. Like, how good is he? Because the elite DJ Lagway is as elite as anybody in the country. And I know that sounds strange, but like, I'm putting him up there with Levitt. I'm putting him up there with Klubnik. I'm putting him up there as high as you want to put him up there. The fastball, the deep ball, the arm is insane. Like, it doesn't take a backseat to many people in college football. How much did last year help him gain experience? I trust this, Brent. I trust his heart. I trust his toughness because I saw him pop his hamstring and come back and still continue to fight for his team a couple weeks later. But it's to me, it's the development at the quarterback spot. And does he go to that next level where it's not just the deep ball, it's the intermediate passing, it's the checkdowns, it's the short stuff. Like, he's got all the tools. But this offense has to run the ball well, which I think it can. And then he has to develop as a really strong quarterback that knows the answers to the test, that knows how to check it down, that knows how to stay on schedule, on script, and not just the highlight plays down the field.
Efficiency, I think, is probably the word that you're talking about. When you look at the numbers, though, to back up what it is that you just said, 8.8 big-time throw percentage. That was number one in the SEC a year ago. That was number one in the Power Four last year, all QBs. So, like, in terms
now
of
tell the, everybody that. So, Brent works for PFF, Pro Football Focus, and they obviously do college and pro. What does that mean? What does a big-time throw mean?
That's the highest grade of throws, plus one or better on the scale, and basically it's the highest graded best throws that you can be in terms of accuracy down the field. Oftentimes it's that. It's accuracy down the field. It's putting in the bucket outside shoulder of the receiver when it's tight coverage, that kind of stuff. The best throws that are out there. He made, on a percentage basis, he made them at a higher rate than anybody in college football last year. So the tools are there to be – and that was my number one question. Well, he put himself in the best quarterback in college football conversation because – you have an O-line that returns. It's very solid.
Center is elite. Center is one of the best in the country. Like, really, really good. And here's – somebody said in the comments, Soren's Wrath said in the comments, like, what makes this Gator offense so good? What's the strongest part of this Gator's offense? To me, it's the line of scrimmage. To me, their scheme is really, really good. They do a great job of hitting you in the mouth, getting plus yards, stretching you out wide, like being very difficult from a – you can't just get in one front and play them. Like, they have answers up front. They do a great job of working together. When you run a zone scheme a lot of times too and guys work together, they have to communicate. They have to get on tracks. Like, they're very well coached up front. The strongest part to me is their line. Like, it's the guys up front – that can pave the way. The running back spot is going to be a strength. Like, we saw, oh my gosh, Ball looks like he's going to be a wrecking ball. Like, he looks like a grown man that can tote the rock. Because last year, another guy, ETN, goes to Georgia, and you're like, that dude's really good. I saw him make big-time plays in the Florida offense. It didn't matter who they that's what shows you how good this offense is, Brent, because they put another guy in and he's good. They put another guy in and he's good. And it's the scheme up front. It's the linemen. It's the communication. Those guys are really good.
Second question, defensively, Vinny Sinceri, which is a name that college football fans should recognize, former Alabama player, won some national championships at Alabama, at sort of a co-DC primary. I don't really know exactly how they're doing it there because there's him and the Roberts guy, but he's there. And you've got a lot of depth up front, really good players in Sapp and Banks up front. I to me, key players to watch for them defensively are – and it's a question a lot of times we ask with all these teams – is what are you getting from other guys if these other guys can be elite type players that raise the ceiling of your defense? And it's the former five stars that aren't necessarily like penciled in starters, but Cormani McClain at corner and LJ McCray at edge. These guys, you know, sort of give you what the talent suggests that they possibly could from a production standpoint? Because to me, they're very solid, but you get something from those guys, it raises the ceiling of Florida's defense.
First of all, like, I think when you talk about Banks, Brent, I don't think you talk about like a good lineman. I think you talk about a guy that could be the best in the country. Like that, like the upside for me, for him is elite of elite. Like could be a wrecking ball. Like could be a one man wrecking crew that makes plays, that penetrates, that just dominates the line of scrimmage. And that's just, you don't say that about many teams. And you saw it last year with him. And so I think that he's a guy. I'm sure you got some PFF numbers for me for that, right? Like, I'm sure you got some kind of like.
He had 29 pressures. He had 4 sacks. Yeah, very highly graded.
I feel like he's going to ascend. I feel like he's going to continue to develop. Here's what I'll say about what you just said and those guys you mentioned. Obviously, they're talented. I'm at a point where I trust Napier to develop them too. That's where I'll say. Now, listen, let's get to the real part of this because we got to get to these other teams too. There's also a schedule problem.
Can they survive the early month stretch at least 2-2? That is my question because it is after.
Give it to us. Give it to us.
Florida, Long Island at home, okay, game one scrimmage. South Florida at home, not necessarily a scrimmage. You got to play that game. But then it's at LSU, at Miami, home Texas, at A&M. Can you get through that 2-2? Because that is brutal.
And here's the thing. Their schedule was brutal last year, and the way they started gave you every reason to think that they would quit and they would fall off a cliff, and they didn't. So, we're going to get to Oklahoma today too. They feel like Oklahoma to me. Like they feel like a team that if they had a different schedule and played in a different league, I'd say they're a playoff team. They're a fringe playoff team. But that's the problem with the SEC. How many times are we going to say this? Like teams that could get hot and make it, like LSU, like Florida, like Oklahoma, like it should. But you just look at that schedule that's pulled up right there, and you go, "Gosh dang!" Like they can play great football, like great football, and win 9 games. Like Billy Napier can be a better coach. They're a way better team, and if they win 9 games, I think they're in the playoff conversation. Like that's how brutal that schedule is. But who are we getting to next? Let's keep rocking and rolling.
By the way, I think they're a 9-3 team. I think they take care of everything in the non-conference, which includes Miami, Florida State, South Florida, but they're 3 SEC losses. That's what I feel for that group. Woo Pig Suey.
Woo Pig.
The Pit Boss. Arkansas, by the way, Pittman in year 6 now.
That's crazy.
They were 9-4 in year 2, 4-4 in the SEC. That's the best they've been. And if I told you they had played in 16 one-score games in the last 3 years, what would you think their record is in those 16 games?
2-14.
4-12. Like okay. 4-12.
Not far games. Off.
And that's been their bugaboo, is they're playing teams tough. They're right in there with a lot of games, but there's not quite getting over the hump.
Well, okay, so let's address why. Like let's address why. The consistency of the teams that they play, they're not as talented. So when you're not as talented, you've got to do something different. You've got to win the turnover battle, which Like just last year, I think about like the turnover battle and like Oklahoma State. I'm like, bro, you're slapping these dudes in the face and then you're throwing pick sixes and turning the ball over. Like, how about the kicking game last year too? Good Lord. It was a cluster. It was ungood. Very ungood. So they've got to win special teams. They've got to win the margins, but let's not go too far and not mention Taylen Green. He's been my guy. I've been talking about him for years. Like, I thought he would win the Boise job. It's crazy he didn't win the Boise job and he left Boise, which is absolutely nuts. But you talk about, I'm just telling you, Taylen Green will be discussed when we start talking about the NFL draft next year. Like, he's going to be a guy that's going to go, oh, man, like, look at those skill sets. 6'5", 6'6", 240, can run, can push the ball. Bobby Petrino came in last year and everyone thought Sam Pittman was going to get fired. Bobby Petrino was going to be the interim coach. That's what everybody talked about last year, how it was going to go. That offense took a step forward. Second year with Bobby Petrino, what he can do at the quarterback helm, Arkansas is going to hang around every game. Do they fix this turnover problem? Do they get the kicking game solved? Do they win close games? They're going to be in a talent deficit. Like, that's normal for them. And it's just the world that they live in. But I think there'll be a team that will be a pain in people's butts and hang around, and a team that can beat you, like the Tennessee game when you watched them a year ago.
Yep. Taylen Green, by the way, basically has an entire new receiving core, and probably actually the most significant news of actual news from SEC Media Days was Sam Pittman talking about the injury to one of his receivers, the Sis kid that transferred from Stanford. He had some sort of wrist injury. He thinks it might be a season-ending surgery, I think I read. That, like, when you're breaking in new guys, you don't want to take one from that room. But you made the point about Petrino. And I actually think one of the things that they need to do is help their quarterback more so than they do. But also just how they throw the football. It is truly a push the ball down the field offense. He's in the top 10 in the Power 5 in terms of average depth of target, in terms of screen percentage. One of the lowest in the Power 5, like 8%. Most teams hover in the 15 to 20% range. Make things a little easier for your quarterback, be more efficient, and allow him opportunities to make those big plays. But I do think their season comes very much like last, where they'll get somebody, one or two.
Yeah.
But be in that 500 overall and potentially, because by the way, they got at Memphis and Notre Dame as well.
Oof. Like, they got a brutal schedule. Their schedule sucks. Like, pull up their schedule real quick, hit them, and then let's get to the next team. Like, it's not fun.
At Ole Miss, at Memphis, Notre Dame, Tennessee, A&M, Auburn, Miss State, okay. At LSU, Texas, Missouri. Like, it's not fun. But, yeah, I think they'll get a couple.
The Ats.
But they'll be right about where they were last season in the SEC, where 2 or 3 wins and, you know, around 500, potentially getting to a bowl game. The other interesting thing from – there we go. There's Arkansas' schedule. The Notre Dame – like, adding Notre Dame and Memphis to your SEC grind, that's just not fun.
I want you to tell me what the other interesting thing from Media Day was, because I don't find a lot interesting. I'd love to hear what you found interesting.
Coach Drink, because Coach Drink is fun. And he enjoys making fun of himself. He said he wasn't going to talk about, I think, the Epstein files. He wasn't going to bring that up. But he talked about his playoff number. And he said, hey, I think 30 is the number in terms of playoff teams. I read or listened to him talk about his structure, but 30 was his number. I think he based it from a percentage like the NFL. Hey, the NFL does
correct
X percentage, so let's get – I mean, I get that, but
we got to do a better job of playing some of this audio sometimes on the show as we go along, because it was, listen, they talk for a while, obviously, and that's you don't need to listen the whole time. Actually, Wes has some of the sound, so Wes, play some of the sound of Drink, because I love the way he addresses this, and it's like, first of all, he's kind of smarmy when he starts, but I like, just listen to Drink and his playoff recommendations.
With our commissioner, you know, when I think about college football right now and think about what do we need to do, I think it really comes down to two things: what's best for our players and what's best for our fans. The rest of us are really only important because of the players and the fans. And so when you think about whether it's 12, 14, or 16, you know, to me, if we've decided to go into this expansion of playoffs and we're trying to follow an NFL model, well, the NFL takes 44% of their teams in order into the playoffs to increase the passion or keep the fan base engaged. If we're talking about 12, that's 9%. If we're talking about 14, that's 11%. If we're talking about 16, that's 12%. That's really not changing the math for the fan base. So I really don't understand what the big fight is about. The other thing I don't really understand about this, you know, we have a lot of complaints. Whether we're talking about 68 teams in the NCAA basketball tournament, we're complaining about the committee. And now, last year we complained about the committee selections. I mean, we produced all kinds of stats and handed them out about why the SEC was so good. Well, the problem is we have a human committee that has no standard set of structure of how they're going to select. They're all human beings. They all have implicit bias. So now we're going to go from 7 to 11, and we think that's going to solve the problem. Until we figure out what exactly the standards are, I don't think that's good.
Okay. So, okay. First of all, Brent, you're a numbers guy. Like, are you... When you hear people, when you hear him start to talk and you hear him talk about the numbers of the percentages and stuff, like, first of all, does that excite you? Do you get jacked up about that? Does that make you like want to go write a PFF article?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. You're a nerd.
I like that he's using logic.
Okay. He sounds like a school teacher, but here's something that I find very interesting. I want you to answer this question for me, Brent. When we had the BCS, what did we have?
Two.
And computers. And we had a formula. We had computers, and everybody griped and everybody moaned. We go to four, and we have a committee. Everybody gripes, everybody moans. We're always going to have negative feedback. Now, what I say about like what he said was the more inclusion, the better. And why is that better? It's always better because late in the season, every game matters. Late in the season, we're going to be talking about teams that we wouldn't be talking about otherwise. How is that a downfall? Like, but at what point do we also get to, just personally, at what point do we get to where, like, now the more you expand, the more the regular season doesn't matter? Late in the season could be really, really good, but you lose and you're like, if you got 30 in these things, like, you can go ahead and put in 10 schools. Like, you can put in 10 schools. You can just, okay, here's the 10. We'll go ahead and pick the next 20 because this might be a little bit flux, but my God, the top 25 and then plus 5 are going to go? Like, that's what we want to do? Like, that's – I'm not in for that. I like more football. I think we're going to get to 16, but – and I love Drink. I love the way he thinks. I love the way he talks. I love the way he runs his team and his offense. Like, they were a sneaky 10 wins last year, by the way. And they were back-to-back top 25 teams, double-digit wins.
Third time in the school's history that they've won back-to-back 10 game, had 10, back-to-back 10 win seasons. That's a lot of football played in Missouri. Only the third time in school history.
What do we think about their squad this year? Because I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting. I'll let you go first.
Well, Bo Cabrillo, is he ready to be the guy? Because he's actually been really good in the small sample that we've seen of him from Penn State.
Do you have numbers to back that up?
Oh, yeah. He was 92.6 passing grade last year.
How many throws?
56.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Small sample size. Very small sample. Okay. But 37 of 56, 424, 9 touchdowns, 1 pick in the little that we've seen of him. But the biggest thing is, can they take advantage of the absolute just home fest that they have? They don't play a road game until October 18th at Auburn. That's unbelievable.
This is incredible. It's incredible. Obviously, hosting Alabama, hosting South Carolina, those are two. So, Central Arkansas, dub. Kansas, it can be tricky sometimes. Louisiana.
Rivalry game.
South Carolina, UMass is a dub. Alabama, Auburn. You got Vanderbilt. You got A&M. You got Mississippi State. And then at Oklahoma, at Arkansas to finish it. It's interesting. Great schedule. Don't leave your home. Good atmosphere, obviously, where you play. But Prabula – if I'm a Missouri fan, I have a lot of optimism about this kid from the second half of the Wisconsin game last year. He was forced into action. Aller was out. They needed him to come up big against a good Wisconsin defense, and he did. And that's where, like, I think Eli Drinkwitz, with his style of offense with Kirby Moore and the way they run the football, Ahmad Hardy coming over, like, they run the ball every year. They do the things I'm talking about with that stretch. And then they, like, yep, they were more of a drop back passing team last year, which this year they're going to run some more, and they're good at it. And they got a quarterback now that fits that mold great. They got a really good offensive line. Like, Missouri's another team. They've got a bunch of really, really good pieces. This offense could be a pain in the neck. Like, it could be a problem for a lot of people. It could be ground and pound. It could be Vandy-esque from a year ago. Eat the clock, shorten games. And then defensively, I just go to the other side of the football and I wonder about replacing a lot of guys, bringing over Damon Wilson from Georgia, who we watched him last year, Brent, before the season, and we were like, that guy's got a chance. He's got some twitch. They pay him a lot of money to bring him over. I'm sure you've got some numbers on him because he was a good – he would have started this year for Georgia.
Well, I think he can actually – so you think about last season for them. Johnny Walker at edge had 50 quarterback Animal. Pressures, which was top five in the Power Four, 10 sacks, third in sacks. I think Damon Wilson can replace that production. Like, I think they're just going to say, hey, here's the edge. Go free. Go get whatever you can get. And let him just run and go beat people. And I think he actually has a lot of skill as a pass rusher.
And they turn him loose.
Yes, that's the big thing.
That's where people are going to – people get upset sometimes. Or not upset, like, people don't understand that systems make players a lot of times. And the system you play in defines how successful I am, just like a quarterback, but just like defense. Defensive line, man, if you turn me loose and let me go, like – I can penetrate, but I don't get my head chewed off because I'm out of gap. Like, listen, that's the way I played. Like, I played defensive line, and it was a suggestion whether I kept contain or not. Like, but here's the thing. I made a bunch of plays. And if you make a bunch of plays, it's okay because you can give up a few plays, but you need some guys that are okay with that. That you need a couple of guys, two or three guys that really – like, Jalen Carter was one of those guys for Georgia. Like, yep. Swim move, get out of gap. I just got a sack, coach. What you got for me? Like, you can have two or three guys like that, and then you need eight soldiers that do their job every single play. But you need some unpredictability. Zion Young on the outside for Missouri. I think Missouri's edge could be a strength of their team, and it could be very productive. But defensively, they're replacing a ton. The schedule obviously sets up really, really well. But I like this Missouri squad. I like them being at home a lot. I like their schedule. I think they're going to be right there in the mix for another season like they had a year ago.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see if they get to be 5-0 hosting Bama, because then it's a big-time game for them at that point. But I see them in that 7-6, 7-5, 8-4 kind of realm. One team I don't see in that realm is, unfortunately, the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Oof. Who did not win – an SEC game a season ago, didn't win many games at all, and lost all of their SEC games by double-digit points. So, rough year one for Jeff Lebby.
Jeez.
Do they get one this year? Okay, positive. Blake Shapen was actually very good
solid
in the time that he played before his shoulder injury. He's back, and I even saw a quote where he felt like he can throw the ball farther, even sort of better at this point. So – hey, that's maybe something to build on. Their schedule stinks again. Like, it's just
okay. So they're not going to be a good team. Pull up their schedule. No. Let's see. Here's what I want to say. I want to know the wins, Brent. Give me the Mississippi State game that you look at on this schedule. Listen, if you're wanting to be optimistic, Mississippi State fans, it's probably the wrong show. I mean, I'm sorry. There's not a lot to be optimistic about. But the schedule, I mean, it's not
at
fun.
Southern Miss, but then they get
you're gonna
Arizona
give, you're State. Gonna give, you're gonna give them that one.
I'm not gonna give them any game. Well, I take that back. They get Alcorn State in week three, Northern Illinois week four. I don't know that I want to give them that, but Arizona State as well week two, and ugh, then the SEC, and then the SEC gauntlet for them. Yeah. I will say this though.
Go ahead.
I might hold off until the prediction part until we get to the last team that we're looking at. So I'll wait for that.
Well, let me say this about Ball State. I think here's what you want to see for Mississippi State fans. Like, first of all, it's a great fan base. The stadium's unbelievable. The cowbell is crazy. It's cool. Like, I'd love to see just some excitement. You hired Jeff Lebby because you wanted Jeff Lebby to bring an offensive philosophy and style that was really, really fun and unique. And so, like, I don't have a lot to give you about optimism, but, like, let's see it do this, Brent. Like, let's see the offense, you know, get their tempo the way they want to get their tempo. Let's see the offense score some points, create some explosiveness, and get some kind of fun. Like, that's what – that just needs some kind of identity. They can't be – bad on both sides. Like, Jeff is a brilliant offensive mind, and I want to see the offense improve and be dominant. Like, be good. I know the defense is going to have holes in it and stuff like that, but, you know, you just want to see something positive going in that direction so you can build some kind of optimism and say, like, we're going to go do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, yep. Okay, I feel better about where we're going to be next year.
Yep, I agree. One thing that should feel pretty good. And I actually have a prediction for Miss State later, so okay. Stay with us on that.
Stay tuned.
Boomer Sooner, Oklahoma. By the way, in terms of picking and looking at all of this, yep. The single hardest team to look at was this team.
Why? Why?
Because the delta, the change from what they were offensively to what they potentially are and can be this year is the widest gap, I think, of any team in the league.
Is it fair to say, can I say this and feel very confident? Oklahoma's offense will be the biggest turnaround in all of college football.
I would. There's no, I don't see how, unless they are bad, unless they aren't good.
Or they're going to struggle. If they're average, they are so much better than they were a year ago offensively. It's ridiculous. Like, if they're average. And so, we've talked about Oklahoma a little bit. Like, I'm all in on Oklahoma too. Like, I like the additions. I like Arbuckle. I like you going into the portal. Like, listen, Oklahoma is not Texas. Oklahoma does not have the resources that other schools have. But I think they did a good job of identifying a few things that they had to have. They had to have the quarterback, Brent. They had to have it. Like, they had to have their guy at QB. They got the best guy available, the absolute best guy available. Like, a guy that fits their style, a guy that makes plays when plays aren't there, that can scramble, that can make plays on the move. You know, they can't have as many guys hurt as they did a year ago. That's impossible on the offensive side of the football. That won't hold true. And then I've said this, and I don't know if people understand this or not or believe it, and you don't have to believe it. This is the best D-line in the league. Like, this is across the board, outside and inside. This is as dominant a group as you're going to find in the country. Like, it's that kind of good. So, like, Oklahoma's not going to be, to me, like, they take massive steps forward. Arbuckle calling the offense. Venables calling the defense. You got your QB. Offensive line will be better. Receivers will be better. Everything about OU to me, the arrow's going zoom up.
Yep. By the way, you said the best one available. Of the top 10 highest graded returning quarterbacks, Mateer is the only one. John Mateer is the only one who's on a new team. Everybody else sort of stayed where they were. And he actually had the number one rushing grade of all quarterbacks a season ago. Over 1,000 yards rushing, equal sort of scramble and design yards. I think that's something that they're going to have to – sort of manage, I guess, in a way to get him through.
Not to take shots.
To get him through the SEC schedule. But the other thing here is you talked about the additions, and we had Jim Nagy on before the draft, and he's done a lot of good things there. Jaden Ott. Can you get Jaden Ott from 2 years ago at running back? And, you know, you have that QB running back combo, playmakers back, healthy potentially. You mentioned the D-line, R. Mason Thomas, big time
baller. Absolutely. Baller. Here's what I love about R. Mason Thomas. Like, Brent, I got to shout these dudes out when I can. Everyone wants and everyone talks about guys off the edge. Oh, give me the length. Like, the length is so good. Like, I don't care. Like, here's a beautiful thing about not having length. I was underneath every single person I went against. Like, I had leverage every single time. Our Mason Thomas is 6'2". But let me tell you something. That first step, bro, it is awesome. It is fantastic. He's quick. He knows how to get around the edge. Last year was kind of a slow start. And really, this is the first time he got a ton of snaps. And I'm sure you got a snap chart in front of you, Brent, with all the grade of him and all that stuff. But, like, once he got through those first couple games, and the Tulane game is when I really saw, I was like, I kept writing down 32. Like, who the freak is this guy? Like, God dang, he's causing fumbles. He's like, he is just all over the field. And when you watch Oklahoma, man, 32 off the edge. He doesn't have the quote-unquote measurables. He's got the first step that's elite. He's got the motor that's freaking fantastic. He's got pass rush repertoire. Like, that dude, it's impossible not to fall in love with a guy like that.
And now the bad part, their schedule still stinks.
Sucks. Like, this is Gators.
They got the short end of the stick with them versus Texas. They 100% did, like, without a shadow of a doubt. They got the short end of that stick. And they also add Michigan as a home game in week two this year. So
how about Ross hating on the Sooners? Struggle Bud for 5 wins for the Sooners? Like, bro.
I think Ross is a Texas fan, if I remember right.
Yeah, get out of here, Ross. No. not digging that, hey, Ross. But look at the schedule though. Illinois State, dub. Michigan. Like, they gotta go. Are they at the Big House, or are they hosting
in
Norman?
It's home.
Thank God it's in Norman. The game's going to be absolutely insane, elite. Temple, give me that dub. Kent State, give me that dub. Auburn, obviously going to be tough, but thank goodness it's at home. LSU at home. Like, yes, please. Ole Miss at home. Goodness gracious. Missouri at home. Thank God a lot of those are at home. But then Brent, go ahead and give me that last part of the schedule, because
At Bama, South Carolina.
At South Carolina, at Tennessee, at Texas. Dallas. But that home schedule is tough. The non-conference, because you bring in Michigan, is really cool. Like, again, give me more of these games. But if y'all think that Michigan's going to come down and bully Oklahoma, I don't think that's going to happen, even though Michigan's been bullying a lot of people in college football.
I like them in that game, and I actually like them to be 5-0 heading into the Texas game. After that, I don't know, just because it's such a week-to-week grind after that.
How you like that? Brent likes him in the first five, bud. Struggle for 5 wins. How about that, Ross? Eat it, Ross. Brent just told you they'll be 5-0. Get you some. Where are we at next, Homer?
Aggies. 8-5 in Mike Elko's first
year. You think people in A&M are excited about Mike Elko? Like, do you think they're jacked up about him?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know about him specifically, but I think they should be excited about their team. I like their team.
I'd be excited about what the heck I got, man, because I had a few lean years with some coaching, and I thought I had it figured out going in the right direction, but, like, to turn around in year one, the culture, the competitive atmosphere, like, I just think it was really fun to watch. And I know Coach Elko really well, but, like, just a fan of the way he carries himself, a fan of his defense, the soundness, the accountability. Like, he creates accountability with people in a great way. And I think that you'll continue to see that from A&M. I think the discipline will pick up. I think the pass defense is going to be better this year. Last year, at times, I was like, golly, man, if they don't get to him in the front half, like, ooh, jeez, this ain't good.
Well, this defense, and you speak about that, getting to them, they got to replace the three S's. Shamar Stewart, which, by the way, have you noticed that he's still holding out with the Bengals? And they're still
I told you that was coming. Listen, don't blame Shamar Stewart. Everyone holds out with the Bengals. That's what they do. It's what I had to do, unfortunately. But no, don't blame him.
Yeah. Shamar Turner and then Scoggins. Like, those three guys, like NFL guys that are now not on your roster, you got to find a way. Like, Cassius Howell was a playmaker there, and he's got to step up. And you got some others, and you got some portal additions along the D-line. But that was such a strength for them a season ago. Can they get back to that? The other thing, though, in terms of strength, they might have one of, if not the best, offensive line in the country with Zahn at tackle. The hyphenated it. Reed Adams at guard, that's big time. Crown over it, the other tackle, like all back, all good to go there. Marcel Reed,
a running back. Well, first, what you said is really good, because last year they were banged up along the front a lot. They kept having injuries, so they built some depth, but they got some dudes. They got some grown men up front. And then they got a back that I'm not sure there's a back that runs harder. Like, Le'Veon's a grown man, bro.
Yep.
Like, that's an adult. Like, I remember tackling Jerome Bettis, and I always equated it to tackling a tree. Like, just running, you're just running in and tackling the bottom of a tree. Just think of it. Like, there's no give. Like, it's just, you just go tackle him. Like, it just, and it hurts. And when he got hurt last year, I think it hurt their squad a little bit too, and it took away some of that physical element. Marcel Reed, we got to talk about him, because last year when he came into the lineup, noticeable difference in explosive plays, noticeable difference in QB run game. I'm very interested, Brent, to see how this offense looks, because you've had a year now. He got some experience a year ago, and now you've had another year to develop it around him, because I don't think it was developed around him a year ago. It was developed.
Go ahead.
No, go, bro.
Well, I was just saying, I like the additions, the portal additions. With Concepcion coming over, you got Bussy already there. You've got guys that win and win quickly that aren't, you don't like Noah Thomas leaving and going as a big play threat, 6'6" guy. It fits to me, these guys, 6 foot, 5'11", 180, 190 pound guys that win quickly. The RPO game with him now becomes, I think, the biggest part of their offense. And I like the fit of the receiver core with him in year two.
Are you talking about Casey Concepcion?
Yes.
That dude is a man child. Like, here's, if y'all don't know this, he's a first round pick in the draft next year. Like, he is one of the few guys that here's what I liked about him the most, Brent. You put him in the slot, first of all. Throw it to him now, he catches it. Run after the catch is freaking elite. Elite, really, really good. But not a lot of guys have that ability also, Brent, to sit down in the holes of zones and understand coverage. Like, some guys are really small and really good after the catch and really fast, which he is fast. But they don't understand, you know, holes, and they don't have the savvy and the smarts and the intellect. He does, Brent. Like, he is, yep. He's a superstar. Like, he is a guy that, like, I think people are going to be like, where the freak did he come from? And because he was stuck in purgatory with an offense that didn't give him the football and didn't have good QB play, I think that he's going to be otherworldly. I don't think people understand how good that cat is.
It all depends, obviously, though, on Reed and his development. And
yeah, he's got to get better throwing the football.
Yep. And by the way, every young quarterback, hey, decrease your turnover worthy plays, increase your consistency, things like that. But I think they did some of those things there. Schedule-wise, they don't have Notre Dame in the opener this year. I think that's a big deal.
Which is good.
It's week three, so they get a couple. They get UTSA and then Utah State the first 2 weeks, which UTSA is never – that's not a pushover by any means. But Notre Dame in week three and then into the SEC schedule. And I don't know that they're getting that win at Notre Dame. But after that, it's three straight home games, Auburn, Mississippi State, and Florida. So they could potentially get on a very positive run with the SEC home slate to start. But I still think they're probably much like they were a season ago, you know, 7-5, 8-4.
So you say get on a positive start. You're basically saying that Auburn and Florida suck? Is that what you're saying? I mean, you're saying
no, but they're home.
Two out of three?
They're home. That's the
biggie. That's a tough place to play, man. Like, that is – That's a tough place to play, man. Like, when you go there and you literally – I remember going there and looking around, and I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, these people are swaying. They're into it. But, yeah, Mississippi State sandwiched between Auburn and Florida. Those are going to be hard-fought wins. They're at home, which is good. You got at Arkansas, at LSU is tough, at Missouri. Then you get South Carolina, and then you go at Texas at the end of the season. So, a lot of tough squads, you know, it will be interesting just to watch to me this offense and just how they morph and how much big play they get out of it, because that'll go a long way for them.
I think the theme of the day, and we'll kind of quickly talk about the last team, Kentucky, last but not least. And my prediction, by the way, earlier, as much as we had not great things to say about Mississippi State, I think Kentucky's the one that's going with the donut this year. I think Mississippi State actually gets somebody, and Kentucky goes with the donut in SEC play this year.
Why?
My prediction.
Why?
I just all the playmakers are going. I don't see anybody that's making plays for them. If they win a game that they grind out, I mean, even with, you know, Calzada, that, you know, of beating Alabama fame with, you know, team we just talked about, but I just don't see them from a talent perspective competing week in and week out. All their best, a lot of their best players are either gone to the league or gone to the portal.
Yeah, a lot of them on other rosters, and you know, when you think about Kentucky and some of these schools moving forward that are big basketball schools, man, and the budget, like,
yep,
you're like, man, I would love to have Barry on. Where he gone? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yep. You just, so many guys that Dane we've King, already talked about, Dane King, yeah. Nebraska. Like, I look at other rosters and I'm like, God, this guy's explosive. Oh, he's from Kentucky. Oh, that's the world they live in, because again, the revenue split for every team and what they're willing to pay salary cap wise when you're a basketball school as well. Big Blue Nation is obviously awesome, but they want to be great at hoops. And, you know, Calzada at least has got a big dub. He's got some experience. He's got some toughness. But here's what I'll say, man, after watching this squad a year ago. I don't care who you put at quarterback, Brent. Like, you could have put Cam Newton back there. They weren't protecting him. I mean, my gosh. Like, I felt legit horrible for Brock Vandergriff. I mean, I was like, man, this poor guy. Like, what? He retired willingly. Like, that's how bad it was last year. He literally was like, I got another year of eligibility left. Like, professor, I'm out of here. That's how big of a struggle that offensive line was. So I don't know. That's got to get better. The schedule could be worse, though. I mean, the schedule absolutely could be worse. But you throw Louisville on there at the end of the season, that ain't fun. And Vandy, I guess, is the game that you point to, and can they get that dub with Vandy? But it's gonna be a tough one, Kentucky fans. But you know, basketball hopefully will be around the corner, and hopefully they'll be successful there.
The theme of the day, I think, with all these teams that we've talked about, and with a lot of these, are, does your quarterback take a leap? And if your quarterback takes a leap forward, if Marcel Reed, if DJ Lagway, if John Mateers shows in the SEC that he's just as good, like, if all these guys take a leap forward, now the trajectory of your season gets completely changed, and you're potentially on that fringe playoff and or pushing for a playoff spot.
Well, and all the teams we're talking about, Brent, as the best teams in these leagues and the most talented teams year after year, they're all replacing the quarterback spot. Like, it's not one. It's all of them across the board almost unanimously. The main teams we're talking about winning the SEC are all replacing the quarterback, and then you got South Carolina, who you feel, you know, probably the best about because of, you know, exactly what you're getting from your dude. You've already seen it. So you feel confident. You got a new OC, which will be different. But who's going to be the guy? You've seen flashes. And that's the weird thing, Brent, too, when we were going through this. A&M, I've seen Reed. Texas, I've seen Arch Manning. Georgia, I've seen Gunnar Stockton. Like, that, I saw them in spot duty play a little bit last year. You know, and then you got Mateer who comes over. Obviously, I've seen him already compete. Like, so it's interesting now in a new spot, maybe a new team. But you got Nussmeier, who's already been there. You've got, you know, Lenora Sellers, who's already been there. We know what they're going to do when the lights are the brightest. We know what they're going to do in these loud stadiums and these tough atmospheres. So when you take some of these newbies on the road and you got to see it happen, what happens? And that's why the SEC, it's going to be fascinating, man. And the how you're going to say, like, I'm guaranteeing you this, it's a hard league to predict because every team is counting on younger guys than they usually do in crucial spots, or inexperienced guys in crucial spots.
So what do you think happens? Who's in the title game in the league?
I mean, I'll pick one because this is easy. Texas. I think Texas.
Who's the second team?
I think Texas is in. I feel like if I'm going to go to the next team, man, like, I do feel like Bama sits pretty good this year from a schedule standpoint, from a weapon standpoint, from an experience standpoint. Do I have question marks about them? Yeah, but I got question marks about everybody. Like, so I'm thinking Texas and Bama will play for the SEC championship, but I don't think either one of them even remote. I have no doubt saying that neither one are going in undefeated. Like, not a chance in Hades are they going in undefeated. And we've seen that a shoot ton in this league. We've seen a ton of Georgia, Alabama undefeated. We've seen LSU undefeated. Like, we've seen a lot of that. Brent, I'm ready to put that stamp down right now. Ain't nobody going into that title game undefeated.
I think you're right. I think, actually, in terms of who I wrote down initially, Alabama and Texas. And the only reason I put Alabama there was because I think until Georgia beats them, like, Alabama, like, I'm giving Alabama that win until Georgia beats them, if you're asking me to flip a coin there, even if it is at Georgia this year. So that's one where, because I think there's going to be 3-4 teams that are 6-2, and it depends on who beats who. And if you look last year, there were nine teams at 4-4 or better of the 16. So that's where I think we're going to be. I think we're in agreement there, but I'm sure we'll be wrong. And by the way, I wouldn't be shocked by any two teams. Unless Vandy or, you know, maybe Tennessee somehow comes out of there or some team like that, you could give me seven teams and I'd be like, okay, yeah, I could see them in the SEC championship game.
The only thing I'll say I'd be shocked by is if Texas isn't there, because their schedule is very nice.
Yes. Okay.
Like, very nice. Now, listen, going to Ohio State is very difficult in the beginning, but that doesn't count against them in the SEC record. No. But if you're looking at SEC schedules, you're like, yeah, I'll take that. Like, them and Tennessee come to mind that I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good. Georgia's is pretty solid. Like, Bama's is pretty solid. So those teams that were, you know, they're pretty dang good. And Georgia this year plays their tough games at home, where they've got a 31-game win streak. They ain't lost since 19. Like, they ain't lost since Jake Fromm was there, for God's sakes. Like, it's been a hot minute. Like, so that's interesting. The SEC is going to be good. Next week, hit the Big 12, right? Yep. Like, let's get some Big 12 love.
And I think Monday will be like roading it again, because I will be out of town and you still might be, I think, as in terms of how we get there. But
oh, I am. Yeah, I mean, I just can't wait to sit here in South Carolina and watch more girls basketball, baby. Yes. Like, just sign me up, baby. Yes, I am coaching. I am helping coach now, but like, that doesn't make it the days any shorter. Like, I love it. I love watching my daughter, but man, like, the hotel rooms are just fantastic. I just love it. Love being right on top of each other in hotel rooms. Love not having my food. Brent, you know how I am about my food, bro. Like,
yes.
I eat the same food every day. I just need my yogurt, my egg whites. I just need my cottage cheese. Like, I don't need a lot of other things. Just give me my stuff.
So did you get a room with a fridge so you could go shopping and get your stuff?
100%. But it's a little fridge, so I just got to be very judicious about – I got to go every other day. But we're going to make it happen. But we'll get on the Big 12. You know, next week, they got obviously Arizona State is a favorite, but Texas Tech has rebuilt their roster as well as anybody in the country. And then, you know, Kansas State's always in the mix. And you got BYU and you got Utah, who's got a great line of scrimmage. So we'll get the Big 12 next week. Thanks for joining us, dudes. And we'll see you guys soon.